Hi, I'm Sally Hughes, and this is the return of Beyond the Bathroom, where each week I find out how my guests feel about their own appearance. What kind of relationship do they have with their own face and body? What are their go-to products? Are they obsessive about their appearance, or is it low on their list of priorities? And how have time and experience changed the way they feel about the way they look? Today's guest is beloved broadcaster, presenter, and novelist Anita Rani. Anita was born in Bradford in 1977. She studied broadcasting at Leeds University, an unsurprising choice given that she'd already hosted her first radio show at the age of 14 on Bradford Sunrise Radio. Anita began her national broadcasting career on Channel 5 before showing her versatility through stints on Radio 5 Live and 6 Music, consumer shows on BBC One, Sky Sports, and everything from Four Rooms to Country File to This Morning and, of course, Woman's Hour. In 2021, she made the Sunday Times bestseller list with her memoir, The Right Sort of Girl, and in 2022 was named the new Chancellor of Bradford University. She recently published her first novel, Baby Does a Runner. Now 46, Anita has said, "I think getting older rocks. We've been sold this lie that it's about being young, that once you leave your 20s, that's it. You're not beautiful anymore or desirable. It's so superficial and such nonsense." So, as a high-profile Asian woman, how often does Anita feel obliged to consider her appearance? And does she feel the need to represent anyone other than herself?
But before that, a massive thank you to our wonderful series sponsor, Skin & Me. Skin & Me is your most accessible, fast track to simplified skincare, offering powerful active ingredients in formulations you can't buy on the high street. Skin & Me can create a treatment for your specific skin concerns, tailored to you by experts. Whether you want to target adult acne, pigmentation, melasma, rosacea, or skin aging, this is powerful, personalized skincare that truly works. As someone who has used Skin & Me for years, I can honestly say I wouldn't go without it. Later in this series, I'm delighted to say we'll be joined by one of Skin & Me's very own dermatologists to answer any and all of your pressing skincare questions. Now, on to today's episode of Beyond the Bathroom.
Welcome, Anita Rani. Thanks for being here.
It's really lovely to be here. I've done a lot.
How do you feel when you hear that back? Do you feel proud of yourself? I hope you do.
Yeah, and then I always get asked, you've done such a variety of things, haven't you? People can't put you in a box. And I did say, and that was by design. I don't want to be put in a box, or certainly not the box that people think I should be in. But also, my career trajectory has not been straightforward. So I've had to take the opportunities as and when they came, and somehow managed to eke a little job out at Woman's Hour and Country File.
I mean, it wasn't overnight, was it? I know this because you were flatmates with one of my best friends, who was also a struggling presenter. And the pair of you were just kind of flatmates and hustling and trying to get work, right? Yeah. A long time ago.
Absolutely. Came to London in 2001. Just a dream of working in TV. Never, with no kind of fear or trepidation, just skint, totally skint, but had this drive and energy and excitement. And I worked in music TV. Do you remember a program called The Ozone?
Yeah.
I was their office assistant for 6 months and then worked at Top of the Pops for the rest of the summer. And then I came back after I finished my degree and was the researcher on the program that Lauren Laverne used to host called Get Your Hits Out.
See what they did there.
See what they did. And just had a blast, and somebody gave me the opportunity. The gay couple that ran the indie, and I think it is relevant that they were gay men, said, "We need to put you on TV." And they took they shot a showreel. Well, I was sort of telling these girls that we were auditioning what to say, and they said, "We should audition you." And they took that showreel without me knowing to a gay Indian man who was at Channel 5.
Wow.
I think it's really important.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I would have got the opportunity had that not been them.
Sometimes people who've been given less of a voice themselves hopefully identify where more people need to come through behind them.
definitely. And yeah, and then that's it. And I thought I'll do it as long as it, I can do it. And I'm still here.
But this didn't come from nowhere, did it? You weren't, you know, plucked and surprised with this media career. You knew that this was a job you quite fancied, didn't you, from watching too much telly?
My cultural portal into the world was TV, radio. I was obsessed with my radio. I had a TV in my room and a radio in my room. And I would sit there every evening with the with the cassette on, pause and record, ready to record the charts. And I listened to late night radio. I would watch all, I watched far too much TV. I used to lie at my very lovely girls' school where the teachers would say, how much TV did you watch last night, and make us put our hands up. And I would lie and pretend I watched less than I actually did, because I used to just stay up and watch late night kung fu movies on Channel 4 and sumo wrestling.
I think, you know, you're only a little bit younger than me, and my kids would never be able to get their heads around how important telly was to us. Yeah. When, I mean, it was everything. It was all I did was watch TV.
Well, it was my access to understanding a world beyond my own and seeing people who had opportunities to do something different. So I loved watching The Word because it was anarchic and wild and naughty. And as well as Terry Christian and Amanda de Cadenet, there was also Jasmine Dottiwala.
Yeah.
Who to me was like, oh my God, this woman with like bunches who looked a bit like me.
And a producer on Network 7, wasn't she?
Exactly.
Too? She was a big deal behind the scenes as well as front of house.
And they were, you know, making this subversive TV show. And then there was Rough Guide on BBC Two with Magenta Devine. And her co-presenters were Shankar Guha, Rajan Dutta, I think he did it, you know, Indian men. And so I guess I was like, are these, people are doing this amazing stuff.
That's so interesting that you were inspired by the people on those shows, because I read, I've obviously read lots of interviews and watched a lot with you over the past week. And something that comes up in those interviews as well as in your memoir is this idea that, you know, growing up, you felt as a woman you had to make yourself feel small,
yeah,
and covered. And so that's such a leap of faith to think, well, actually, I'm going to go out front. I'm going to be on the telly where everyone can see me. So tell me how you got there.
I don't think I was ever small, though. I said to my dad the other day, dad just said, listen, ever since you were a kid, you just told us what you wanted to do. And all we did was open the door and kind of facilitate what you wanted to do. I've always been quite willful and energetic. And I think just comfortable enough to go into a room and be myself, you know. I mean, it's really complicated, isn't it? Because so much of that changed, interestingly, when I started my broadcasting career. Like I said, I just turned up to London thinking, yeah, the world. I remember at university people having a conversation about never being able to move to London because they couldn't afford it. And that is the sad reality for a lot of people.
Especially now, yeah.
More than ever. Mm. And I just remember thinking, nothing's going to stop me from going there. I don't care. Money will come. And money was never the driving force. It was just wanted to work in music, telly. I wanted to be just doing, needed to get out of the cul-de-sac in Bradford desperately, and just always felt like I wanted more and felt different. And it was when I moved to London that I discovered my people. Actually, university first. I discovered music and I discovered clubbing and dancing and going out to clubs and house clubs and drum and bass clubs. That's where I found my freedom. And I went with my rucksack and my baggy trousers and just
that. Whistle, bunches.
No whistle.
Mini backpack.
Mini backpack, exactly. Just had that. And I still love dancing. Still find absolute, utter freedom in, I was in Fabric a couple of weeks ago. Haven't been for years.
Blimey.
I know.
I don't know what I do in a club now. Very much loved them at the time. Before we continue with this conversation, here's a quick message about our wonderful series sponsor, Skin and Me. As discussed in this episode, taking time for yourself is so important. No matter how busy my days get, I make sure I wind down and enjoy my Skin and Me moment. The Skin and Me Daily Doser is tailored just for your skin. Following an in-depth consultation process, ingredients are selected for your skin's specific needs. Whether you want a flawless base for makeup or the confidence to ditch the foundation altogether, Skin and Me can help you achieve your goals. This is powerful, personalised skincare designed by experts with formulations you won't find on the high street, delivered directly to your door. Every single consultation and photo set you submit is personally reviewed by an expert dermatology clinician. Your formulation is then made to order and evolves each month as your skincare journey progresses. Plus, you'll have regular check-ins with the dermatology team to monitor your progress and access to expert advice whenever you need it, including reformulations as necessary. Try your first month of personalised treatment from Skin & Me for $4.99 instead of the usual $24.99. Just visit skinandme.com and use the code SALLYANDME to get started. That's SALLYANDME to get started.
And so when you say you were quite willful, what were you being willful against? What was the expectation of you? I know you're extremely close to your parents, but in terms of the time you were growing up in,
yeah,
the country you were living in, the culture you'd grown up in.
So I think I grew up in within the same household, two very different cultures, because my dad came to Yorkshire when he was four. So he's a real
Yorkshireman, yeah.
Totally, through and through. But not only that, he has a really open outlook on life and very much wanted more for his own life. He had a very complicated upbringing. My grandparents came straight from India, from a village, as a lot of migrants in the 50s did, to this country. They weren't the educated elite, as is the case in America with the South Asian community. These were people who came to do the jobs that nobody wanted to do here. So they were working the mills and the foundries.
And displaced people very often, right?
Yeah.
From a history of displacement.
From Punjab. So people who watch my Who Do You Think You Are will know that at the point when the British left India, the partition of India happened, and that's the region where my family are from. 15 million people displaced, a million died, and that's within Pakistan and India. And so, yeah, my grandparents, and it's a rural, I say in the book that we are culturally identical to the Irish. We're people of the land,
right,
rural community. And my grandparents came from that community. But what comes with that is a real working class mindset. And so my grandfather did not value education. He just thought, I'm going to take my kid out of school at 15 and he's going to work with me. Whereas my dad is very, very bright and very creative. I wanted to do loads. And so he had the attitude that my children will have every opportunity that I won't. My mum came from India at 24. Give me a real potted history of my life here, aren't I? Are you still with us? And she wanted more as well. But at the same time, and here's where things get complicated, it's often women who fly the flag for the patriarchy. Even though she has this go, be free, and is so empowering and so positive, she also has this, you are the pride and you are the shame of our family. Therefore, you will never step out of line and do anything that brings shame, in the same way that she was taught. And so, yes, go and be successful, but also marry someone Indian, mm-hmm, and don't step out of line, mm-hmm, and da 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 da. And so you are, and also you absorb it. Don't all women, we absorb it through just what we observe and how we're meant to behave. And it's not even overtly said to us. We just see it in the looks we're given. We see it in how women are written about in newspapers. We just, our generation in particular, those of us who grew up in the 80s and 90s, you know, we grew up at a time where page 3 of a national newspaper just had women with their breasts out.
Yeah.
And that was normal.
Yeah. It wasn't even that long ago.
Wasn't that long ago.
Because I remember it blowing up on Twitter when page 3 went. On Twitter. Twitter feels so new to me to be discussing something that I associate with childhood. But it was still going on until really recently.
And if you decided that you wanted to say how you felt about it, you were a mad, raging, but feminist who hated men, who didn't want to empower these women who were empowered. It's like... And you were made to feel like you were the one with the problem. So I don't know, we got from my grandparents to that.
Well,
we go.
So I wanted to talk about your mum. She comes up a lot, obviously, when you talk about yourself. A mum will for so, so many women. Your mother is very engaged with the self-care of beauty, right?
Massively.
Loves a beauty treatment. Tell me about that and when did you first become aware of it?
My whole life. My whole life. So she encouraged me to have opinions, but the most important thing for my mother in life is that I look after my appearance. And even to this day, Sally, if I call my mum now, at the end of the call, she'll go, okay, and if you have 10 minutes spare, remember to put a face pack on. And or the minute I walk into her house,
so
she will just attack me with a new concoction that she's made. And it's all within the fridge.
So homemade?
Homemade. Everything is homemade. And I absolutely love it, I have to say.
So what would be like her speciality?
So basic is yogurt, honey, lemon, bit of tiny bit of turmeric because it's a natural antiseptic, anti-inflammatory. And also, I suppose it gives a yellow tinge to the skin, which makes
a glow.
And we all know this stuff now, don't we? And lemon being an astringent. And so that's like a go-to. And if your skin is particularly oily, gram flour, because that absorbs oil. But now she's into... massage with coconut oil. So ancient remedies, but also what I eat as well. So I eat she's been giving me 5 blanched almonds every morning all my life, and I still do it to this day.
Wow.
And she always used to say, it's good for your brain and it's good for your skin. And I'd say, how do you know? And she said, because my mother told me, and we didn't ask as many questions as you. And then lo and behold, now in the West, everybody knows that almonds are great for you.
Yeah.
And my mum says, see, we have known this for centuries and centuries, and now the West have cottoned on. Now you believe it. And she's right. You know, I didn't just accept what my mother would tell me.
And so when you were growing up, did you see her constantly or making a habit and a ritual out of taking a moment for herself to do her thing?
Yeah, but not taking a moment. She'd put her face pack on and get in the kitchen and carry on doing other stuff.
Right.
And so that's the thing. She'll be like, no, but actually she's very keen for me not to do that. She absolutely advocates now for me to sit down and rest. And she says, you must make time for yourself. You've worked really hard. And now, so I actually try and not, because I do that. I put a face back. I'm like, okay, I'll do this and I'll read this and I can do my nails and do it. But now I'm like, actually, no, if I'm going to do it, I'm just going to give myself 10 minutes and sit down.
So for her, it was less about self-care, more a means to an end. I must look good.
Yeah, absolutely. And she looks great. And she does. And now she has this amazing face ritual where she does facial yoga. So she'll sit there pulling face. She's like, do it. Come on. Stick your tongue in this cheek. we laugh. She's, she's a beauty mad. Beauty mad.
And so at what point, if you can remember, did you first become aware of your own appearance? Would it have been through her?
My own appearance.
Can you remember when you first thought, this is how I look. Do I like it? Do I not like it? Shall I play with it? Shall I not?
I don't know when I first became aware, cared about my appearance. I think I purposefully didn't think about my appearance because as an Asian kid growing up in Bradford in the 80s and 90s, you know that you are not seen the same as everybody else. The boys are not going to fancy you.
How did you know that? Was it just in the air? Or
racism.
Overt racism.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, no one's going to fancy you. And you just know, you just look at it and you're like, oh, my blonde, blue-eyed mates, that's what everybody wants. It's Barbie, it's Cindy, it's not me. It's just, you're nowhere. You're not in the landscape. You're not seen in magazines. There's no hot Asian chick who's the love interest. You know, nobody like you is beautiful, apart from in India where you watch Bollywood movies. And that's where I would watch Bollywood movies with my mum on a Saturday and with friends, family friends on a Saturday night. And that's where I saw beauty women, beautiful women, and thought, okay, maybe there is a world where what I look like is seen as beautiful, but not in my world where I'm growing up.
Even in Bradford, which has such a huge Asian community.
Yeah, but I didn't grow up in that community. And yeah, because you step into your community and then you step into the wider world. Also, I just was really, and you know, grunge was my thing. So I was, anything that was going to sexualize me was just not happening.
Yeah.
So I was more than happy to just be like, I'm not interested. Didn't have a lipstick, did not wear any makeup. However, eyeliner was a must. The ritual of me wearing eyeliner, I remember when I first put that on, I was about 14.
Where was it from, please? This is an important detail for me.
Oh, the Kohl. I don't know.
Just like a traditional kind of cheap Kohl
pencil. So I've been watching my grandmother put the, it's called Surma. And it's, it was made with lead originally, which is why my grandma probably had blooming jam jar glasses on. But, and it's in a beautiful, I've still got my grandmother's beautiful metal ornate little vessel. How do I describe it?
So it was loose coal.
Loose coal, powdered. And in it would be a metal thin rod. And it's very ornate bottle. I'll send you a picture. And you'd pull the rod out and then you would... run it between your eyes like that.
Yeah.
Just,
I remember those.
And then you'd get a little flick at the end and it just darkens the eyes. And so that was a big deal. My mum encouraged me. My mum said, come on, put a bit of coal on.
Has your mum always got a face on?
Mum always had a face on, but I think coal is just seen as something that is a rite of passage for a young girl. And so it's not seen as something that you are doing to enhance your beauty. Lipstick, no.
Yeah.
No, lipstick is seen as something that, you know, is sexual and it's for a woman.
That's so interesting.
But coal is something that little girl could put on and it just makes your eyes pop. And so I'm in my eyeliner is my
that your ride or die? Eyeliner?
Now it's a bit more than that. Now I've gone cut the other way. I absolutely love makeup, but coal I have a spiritual connection to.
Yeah,
I think a lot of cultures do.
Yeah. Now, I've heard that before from Asian guests, that something about eyeliner that feels like a rite of passage. It feels like an entry into womanhood.
Yes.
Into something more sophisticated. And
and then I got to school and I got told off for having it on.
Oh, really? Yes. We sent home.
Oh, yeah. We got told off for having a nose ring as well. That's all right. Go away.
And so you go, I think you and I have talked about this before, this thing about, you know, music and club culture exploding in your life. And you've certainly written about it a lot. You know, I think at one time you said to me, you know, being a brown raver is such an unspoken thing. You know, the idea of just being this club kid who's an Asian woman, because there's this stereotype of, you know, young Asian women are studious and they're, you know, and they look really hyper feminine and they're not going to clubs and throwing themselves around to
We're docile, we're submissive, and we're at home having arranged marriages, cooking chapatis, which is why we are very much trusted to read the news, and we're clever. Fooled you on that one. But yeah, are we out having a good time or a sense of humour? It's changing now. But that's when I moved to London, and that's where I found my tribe.
Yeah. So what did that mean to you, that kind of explosion of music and club culture and fashion and all of that stuff? What did that matter?
At the end of the 90s, there was the Asian underground that exploded. So you had like Talvin Singh and Nithin Sawhney, and you had Goodness Gracious Me on TV. And we're like, finally, we're having a moment. Meant everything. I went to a warehouse party in Dalston at the beginning of the 2000s when I just moved to London. And it was a mate of mine's warehouse. And it was a brilliant fun, great music, except 80% of the people in there were brown like me. And it was all the misfits from all over the country. And I felt seen, just found my tribe of people who I don't have to explain anything to. They just get it. In fact, they get it in a way that nobody can. We look at each other and we're like, yeah, come on. Come on.
An unspoken thing.
Yeah. In the same way that women have it, you know?
Yeah.
We know the struggle. We know. We see each other. And so that's just another dimension.
And what was happening with your appearance at this point? Because I feel that particular part of your life, one's life, is when people really start like experimenting, messing around with hair, makeup, clothes. What are you looking like at this point and how are you feeling about it?
So I have got this dual personality. I am very much quite a casual dresser, loved my Levi twists and my trainers. I've basically dressed the same way since the 90s. Look, school shoes are back in fashion.
They really are.
90s, it's all back. But then I've got a job as a TV presenter. And so now I have to wear makeup and I buy a lipstick. I bought a lipstick by now.
Yeah.
And I'm understanding foundation. I used to live with my best mate, Laura, who was this tall, beautiful blonde from Selby, who we met in London. She worked at ITN. Very clever, very funny, would never leave the house without a face on. And we share a birthday, and we had a joint birthday party, and she came out of her bedroom with brand new. We said we're going to wear new outfits. That's the ritual I have. I always wear a new outfit on my birthday. So we had a new outfit. She had a new outfit. She looked amazing, little skirt, full face of makeup. And I stepped out with a vintage Adidas t-shirt on. And she was like, Anita, are you not going to get changed? It's like, I just got this from the secondhand shop today. And she's like, oh, bloody hell, Anita. Anyway, now we meet up and she's like, I cannot believe it's the same you. She's like, you're like literally so glamorous every time I see you. Like,
I mean, we'll come back to Strictly, but you know, at one time you're bedecked in sequins every week, and, you know, and the tan and the makeup and the high heels and all of that stuff.
It's a process. So Strictly was even that. Yeah, that's the first time I've stepped out. And obviously, you know, nothing compares to Strictly. But even then I didn't feel it, right?
How do you mean?
I didn't feel like I was embodying. You might have put the outfits on. There's a difference between having I mean, maybe I did. Maybe I'm doing myself a disservice. I did in some of the routines. Now I feel like a complete. I just feel different. I feel more in my body, more comfortable in my skin than I've ever felt before.
So this is really interesting to me. So Strictly was not even that long ago, right?
No.
So you're on Strictly, you're completely like dressed up to the nines in that uniquely Strictly way, and you feel what, a bit of an imposter, like you're not, it's not you, and you can't really turn that out.
Yeah, I mean, even things like what I realise now is actually, even when you're in Strictly, you can say to people, maybe I would like to wear something that's a bit different. I just go, yeah, okay, that'll do. And so some of the outfits, I'm like,
Interesting.
You know, it's just having the confidence to know what you want.
So how long ago was that?
2015.
So really not very long ago. So 7-8 years ago, you were being given these costumes that were not really your vibe, not your energy, but you didn't say something. But now that's inconceivable to you now that you wouldn't say.
Completely. I mean, throughout my TV career. So you've got me, like grungy kids, like baggy jeans. And like I had a style, I had a vibe. It was very street culture.
Yeah.
I felt the minute I stepped into TV world, I had to become TV presenter. And that meant that I was put, like, I wasn't really dressing the way I wanted to. And the amount of times I've let TV producers dress me, never let a TV producer tell you what to wear.
I mean, the last person.
Literally, the last person.
Yeah.
Brilliant makeup artist, but also not, you know, we're talking 20 years ago, women who didn't really have foundation to match my skin tone.
Yeah.
I was told by one makeup artist, a wingy liner is for Eastern eyes. Western eyes do round eyeliner. It's like, oh my God.
Jesus.
Thank God the world has changed, right? So I've heard a lot of nonsense. I'm sure lots of people have all sorts of experience. Again, we'd just go, okay, people please. Just what? Who is that? I wish I could go back and give that little girl a shake.
So that wasn't even that long ago. What made you not question or fight against those things then? That you wouldn't hesitate to do now? Is it a privilege that comes with success, or what's changed in you?
So I think it's because I believed that I needed to do what people were telling me to do in order to succeed.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't, if I, the minute I start saying an opinion or telling them what I really think, and this is the truth, Sally, for me, the game is different. I have traditionally not been able to say what I really want to say because it just won't work out well for me.
Yeah.
So you shave off your edges and you learn to shut up and you learn to just become someone you're not. It's awful, really, thinking about it.
There's obviously a lot of intersection for you, race, culture, gender and so on, but certainly a powerful part of that puzzle is being a woman.
100%.
It's a huge part of being a woman, isn't it? Shaving off your edges. Do not push your luck.
Yep.
Because there's only room for one of you here, maybe two max.
Yeah. And then what will they say? They'll say, oh, she never speaks her mind. She never tells us what she really thinks. It's like, yeah, because she has learned to keep her mouth shut.
Yeah.
Because she's been spoken over.
Yeah.
Or she's been put down. Or, you know, and she's just absorbed, because women are smart, that this isn't going to serve me well in this situation. Yeah. So in order to survive,
you assimilate and...
Yeah.
And so what experiences in TV made you understand that that was your job as a woman, to be smaller, smoother, softer?
Oh, gosh. I don't even know what the experiences were. I think it's just the hustle, just recognising how I've got to manoeuvre my way through this industry to get what I want. But now I feel really different. I think the world has changed. I think post Black Lives Matter, I think post lockdown, I think we've got a new generation who are really confident about their identity. I feel very empowered by them. I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm doing myself a disservice, because I was going to say, now I feel like I have a duty to sort of really represent for them. But someone did message me the other day and say, Anita, you've been repping as hard since day one. Like, you were the first Asian woman on telly in jeans and with a Yorkshire accent. And,
I mean, yes.
You know, just like talking about clubbing. And so, so maybe I am kind of looking back and thinking it was a lot worse than it was. But I just feel like now I'm owning myself a little bit more.
Not to diminish at all the way the world has changed, but I would say quite a big thing has happened since those Strictly days, and you're wearing a dress that's a bit wrong for you. You've gone through a process that is life-changing for lots of us, which is you're in your 40s.
Yes.
So tell me about that. Tell me what changed there and how.
Everything. Absolutely everything. I remember thinking, I'm going to get to 45 and I need to live I need to live a whole life. I've done everything for everybody else and I don't mind. It's just the way I've been brought up and I've really enjoyed it. I've worked really hard. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, it'd be quite nice to understand what it means to be a hot just me. Really worked hard to get myself into a place of extreme privilege where I don't have to answer to anyone.
You're at the interval,
yes.
I think.
You're
at the interval. You're popping out for a choc ice, aren't you?
Yeah.
And you're going, well, I'm going to go back in there. I've only got that then.
That's it. I'm very aware of how finite life is. And I feel like it's having, I'll call it what you want, transformation, an awakening. Somebody said to me, because I said, oh, I'm going through the transformation to become something else. And they said, no, maybe just going back to your authentic self. Maybe you're actually just going back to who you always were and who you should have been the whole time. And it's great, Sally. I genuinely, you know, you said it in your intro, people are like, oh, it's all about youth and beauty and being in your 20s. This is, I feel fantastic.
I read you saying that you feel this is the best bit, that being older is the best bit.
Yeah.
That this is the bit you've enjoyed most about life.
Definitely. And I think it's because I've instigated it. I've made it my best bit. I've always said the best is yet to come, and I still live by that.
But alongside that, you are a front-facing broadcaster.
Yes.
And whatever else has been tricky along the way, you are objectively a very good-looking woman, right? And you know that that's the business you're in. Of course, one has to look nice at the same time as being excellent and being talented and everything. And so how do you feel about the future as you get older? Do you feel things are getting better, more accepting of the fact that women grow up?
Yeah, definitely. I look at women around me and I think it's, especially in my industry, the most amazing women are in their 50s. You know, people, my contemporaries, Claudia, Zoe,
yeah.
Davina... Oh, God, Tess. I mean, you name it. Like, the women who are absolutely at the peak are in their 40s and 50s and having the best time. And, you know, we're seeing older women still presenting. Is it getting... No, we're held to a completely different standard.
Yeah.
Men can... You know, so many beautiful women on TV, a lot of very ugly men.
Yes.
You know, being able to do... You know, not even having to bother. Actually, but I'm... Whatever. I quite like the fact that we get to dress up. I would not want to just have to put on a blue suit every day and turn up to work.
Right. So I think this all the time.
Yeah.
And having raised two boys and had to buy a million stripy T-shirts, so there's literally nothing else to buy, right?
I feel sorry for them.
It's boring. Like, do you have a beard? Do you not have a beard? Do you wear a blue suit or do you wear a black suit?
Yeah.
The choices seem so limiting.
I was at the Glamour Awards and it was such a powerful room of women. The speeches that were being made on that stage, the women and the success and the level of achievement and the bodies and the dresses and the sparkle and the glamour and the hair and the makeup. I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
This is what it's about.
Yeah.
Let's not apologize for doing it all.
Yeah. I feel exactly the same. I just feel like we have, you know, despite all the difficulty and the judgment and the double standards and all of the stuff you describe, I just feel like we've got this huge play box that men don't have.
We
can express ourselves in a way that men just simply can't.
Yeah. Can I pick up on something you said about being objectively good looking? I've never seen myself, I've never looked in the mirror and thought I'm good looking, okay? And that, take it how you want. What I do recognise now is that I feel very powerful and comfortable and confident. And I know that that exudes a certain...
There is a youthfulness and a vibrancy about you because
definitely.
Of your character, for sure.
Right.
You bounce into a room.
I bounce into a room, but also I feel confident in my skin. But in the industry I'm in the landscape and the what is deemed beautiful and what is wanted, I am definitely not it. Do you know what I mean? I am on the outskirts and I'm constantly...
You are absolutely beautiful, but...
But I'm fighting to kind of fit the mold of what people feel. So when I was growing up, and even when I entered the industry, you wouldn't put a black or an Asian woman on the front cover of a magazine because no one's going to buy it.
Yeah.
And we now know that that's bullshit, right? Or films for that matter. Or the, you know, still look at the music industry. Where are the South Asian talent?
Mm-hmm.
We're not there yet. And so, okay, yes, whatever people might say about how I look, it's a different game because when you're judged on what your appearance, you know.
But you said there when you were younger, you looked in the mirror, you never thought you were good looking. You sound a little bit like you didn't really care much.
No, I didn't. I hated my nose as well. Absolutely hated it. And what I recognised is, we need to talk about noses.
I like a strong nose in
me
a person.
Too,
in a man, for sure. In a woman, definitely. I'm admiring of a strong nose.
Yeah,
I think
me too.
It's a vibe.
We all grew up in a very polarised Western beauty standard, which is not a strong nose. If I was in a wonderful Paris,
yeah, right,
things would be different, but not in the UK. And so, you know, that's the kind of beauty myth that that has been sold to us, that this is, and you know, that's what I've been brought up in. But what I recognised was, and I wanted my nose doing forever.
Did you?
Yeah. And I had the opportunity. I went to LA, I interviewed this guy, he was like Dr. 90210. And he said to me, and he's actually made all his money from rhinoplasties in America. And he said, I'll fix your Indian nose for you. And
What did you do with your face when he said that?
I said he's going to fix your Indian nose.
Yeah.
It was Indian. I actually came back and I said to my agent, do you think I should have it done? And she said, no, you'll be too pretty. And I thought, what does that even mean? Too pretty. But what I also recognise is I always wanted my nose doing when my self-esteem was at its lowest.
Because it's not really the nose, is it?
It's not. The minute my self-esteem was down, I'd look in the mirror and I would just see my face and hate my nose. Nothing to do with my nose.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with it. Like, my nose is my ancestry. My nose is who I am. My nose is my everything. It's me. And now, I probably shouldn't say this because I always say never say never. You never know. I might still have a little. Apparently, noses keep growing.
They do keep growing. So do ears.
So there may well be a point in my life where, and please, I'm just going to put this out as a disclaimer, I may well have it done, because if it keeps growing, I'm
going to... Do not shout at Anita Rani if in 25 years she gets a nose.
Thank you. However, what is the message I'm sending out as the one brown woman doing sort of fact 10 in this country and in those spaces if I get my Indian nose fixed? Yeah. What is the message I'm sending? Not that I'm doing it for them, but I feel like...
It does matter, I think.
Of course it does. And I try to be as authentic and as real as possible.
There's also that funny thing I always think with noses, when people get a nose job, that people forget, or bad surgeons forget, that a face is an equation that adds up to a certain thing, right? And if you change one of the bits, the whole face stops working. Do you know what I mean? We've all seen kind of, you know, actresses, and she's spoken about it openly, like Jennifer Grey or whoever, who've had a major nose job where they've had quite a strong nose, very cute and pretty. Somehow you can't quite get purchase on the face in the same way anymore, because it's a sum that adds up to something.
Yeah.
You know, and I see that sometimes. I see, obviously, in my industry, I see people who have loads of work done and I see it and I think, oh, I can't quite make your face make sense anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's a funny one. You change one thing and it has a domino effect.
It's a long conversation and has many different sides to it. And I don't sit in judgment of anyone who feels they need to do anything to them, because do it, you know, if it's going to make you feel better. But there is a real tragedy that we are in a world where people feel they have to cut themselves to fit some kind of weird beauty standard. Like, who's setting them? Who's telling us that this is what we should look like? Shouldn't we all just be able to step forth in our individual glory?
And do you feel the pressure being front facing to maintain your appearance in a certain way, or to remain youthful looking, or do you feel you've let that go?
I don't know if I've let it go. I feel like I've got youthfulness is my most important thing for me. I never want to lose my energy and I never want to lose vibrancy. And I think we can't get any younger, but we can remain youthful. So I never want to be that person who says it was much better in my day.
Yes.
Because I think that's
such a big thing.
As soon as you start saying that, you're done. So I still want to have young friends, just to have a lust for life. You know, you meet these amazing, sparky 80-somethings and they've just got that twinkle in their eye. And I kind of want to maintain that. That's more important to me. You know, Helen Mirren. Dame Judi Dench.
Yeah.
That spunk.
Yeah.
Naughtiness.
Yeah.
Actually, I want to get more naughty. I want to, like, you know, all the stuff I told you about how I've had to shave off the edges. I want to get the edges back.
Yeah.
But in answer to your question, I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to feel about my face in 10 years' time. I'm in my mid-40s now and, you know, a good facial. I love a facial. I found an amazing facial.
Now, okay, I think this is a great divider of women.
Yeah.
Do you like a floaty, strokey, pampery facial, or do you want someone to take disgusting shit out of your skin and show it to you?
So
I'm the latter camp. I want a hammering. Yeah. I want things to happen.
So I've been having facials my whole life, not just mum, but actually going to go and face. And my pet hate is cleanse, like a good scrub and a cleanse and then a mask, and then they leave the room for you and do that.
Can't
for
stand
20
it.
Minutes.
Do that at home.
What am I doing here?
You can do that at home.
I hate it.
I want a severe massage.
And I want you to be here for the entire time, touching, doing. And if you're not on my face, do something somewhere else.
Yeah.
Give me. I have found the most incredible place. I don't know if you've come across it. You probably have, Sally. In fact, did you mention it to me? Relaxed. in East London.
Oh, no.
Oh, right. Okay. So I've discovered, it's not far from me.
We'll put this in the show notes in case you're in East London and want to.
Yeah. Go. Proximity is very important.
Yeah.
I'm very lazy. Yeah. But when you live in London, you know, you need to hang in your hood. And it's the perfect sweet spot in between where they do absolutely everything. They go in your mouth if you need it. And I clench my jaw a lot because there's a lot of stress going on.
I love a facial in the mouth.
Yeah. You probably know all the names. They kind of do the stamp on your face.
And
they do
the cupping and all that.
LED light, yeah. Facial acupuncture, but also the most incredible facial massages. And
it's all about the massage.
And it's all about the heated bed and lying under a duvet with a scented candle.
Do you know what I love? I love when they press your shoulders down at the beginning. That's my favourite bit. Love that. And they just force your shoulders down.
And it is just amazing. It's emotional to have somebody give you that.
Yeah, and it is.
Care.
It's so intimate, isn't it?
So intimate. And it's a woman going, I am going to... And it's ancient.
Yeah.
Women have been getting together to do beauty rituals forever. I went to Morocco and I stayed in the most incredible place in the Atlas Mountains, this old Berber village house, no electricity, and they had a hammam in the basement and it was all lit by wood and they had it burning all day and so we had a steam.
Oh, wow.
And it was women, three women in there and we brushed each other's hair and scrubbed each other's backs. And talked and laughed.
It's so bonding, isn't it? Because even if you're out of a gorgeous hotel in Morocco and you're in a house in Bradford with your girlfriends, it's the same thing, right?
Yeah.
It's the kind of the getting ready and the smell of hairspray.
Lovely.
And your tunes on and you're going out. It's the best bonding, isn't it? It's better than the night out.
Completely. And my best friend Harpreet over plucking my eyebrows in the 90s.
Well, they've come back.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Also a bit of microblading.
Yeah.
So beauty bonding rituals, and I absolutely love it now. I've gone the other way. The more pampering, the better.
So what does your routine look like? Because what I think is really interesting. So I'm obviously not a TV presenter at all. Occasionally I go on the telly and I never really like it. I like the radio because you can turn up looking like a right old dog.
Oh,
nobody cares.
Mate, you're literally radiant. Look at you. Like those sparkly eyes, that glowy skin.
Aww.
I mean, she lives it. She breathes it.
But there is a freedom in radio that you don't have in television.
No,
Let's face it.
Not
you've
anymore.
Got to get in hair, makeup.
Not
everything.
At Woman's Hour. We film everything.
Filmed,
and also it's not TV. So it's not cameras and they're not, it's pretty diabolical, really. There's just some botch job camera shoved in your face.
I've been on that Woman's Hour cam many a time. It's worse. It's the worst of all worlds, isn't
honestly,
it?
Honestly, don't worry. I'm on a mission. As someone who comes from TV, I'm just going to get them to sort it out. It's like, can we please?
I mean, at least get a ring light in there.
It's Woman's Hour, please. Yeah. There's a lot. Let's do us all a favour. I mean, listen, we know we're fighting the good fight, but that's a very close camera angle.
So they could not be more different in terms of when you've got to get there, how much time you've got to prep your face, your hair, your clothes, all of that stuff. And so your rituals must change quite dramatically between one and the other.
So depending on what type of programme I'm doing, if I'm in a studio, I will have a makeup artist. And so there's a bit more time and a bit more prep.
Who do we love, please, to do your makeup?
Okay, my girl is Sarah Jane Y. She is absolutely amazing. She was at Charlotte Tilbury for a very, very, very long time. And we met because I was hosting an event. Actually, it was with I'll name drop. It was a charity dinner and the Fab Four. As they were known then, Fab Four, before everything happened. So it was Harry, William, Kate and Meghan all together. Mm-hmm. And I was hosting the event. There's a name drop or four. And she came to do my makeup and she was pregnant. She came home and she just did my face in a way that no one else had done.
And you just thought, oh, I feel different.
I feel different. I'm like, what did you do? And also we just got on like house. And now she's one of my best mates. We went to Glastonbury together. And now she's just my go-to. She's just great. And what I realised is there is a huge difference between someone who just is trained in one way and someone who knows what to do with a face, because everyone's face is different.
Yeah.
And she's great. And skin preparation is essential for her.
Right. So what is your skin prep?
So when Sarah Jane does my makeup, in fact, she should be here telling you because she knows better than I do, but she puts there's a lot of facial massage and a lot, it's lovely. It really gets me in the zone as well. And a lot of various creams. And then she will always use, I mean, for her, it's the magic cream that she'll then put on underneath before we start the makeup. But facial massage, she will really kind of get in there and kind of try and, I guess it's getting all the puffiness out, if there is any.
Yeah, I mean, I wake up with such a puffy face.
Yeah, spoons.
Yeah.
Put two spoons in the fridge. Yeah. I mean, I know you know all
Love
this.
A spoon.
Spoons are great. Anything to kind of just, even with your fingers, the pads of your fingers. When I'm filming Countryfall or I'm out and about doing a documentary, I need to just get myself ready and I'm out. And I'm very low maintenance, but I will not compromise on having, I start my day with a glass of warm water.
Do you? Yeah. Lemon in it or just
no,
water?
No, just water. I'm sure you could put lemon in, but it's just a glass of warm water. A, it's very soothing. I feel it gets my system going, mm-hmm. and it's hydration. Mm-hmm. And that's just become like my obsession now. Even if I'm in a Premiere Inn, there's a kettle.
Yeah.
And I am in a Premiere Inn.
Five almonds.
Chuck those in. And then, I mean, it was always very simple. It's just moisturiser. But now I've advanced. Now I use a vitamin C serum. Do you want to know my actual beauty ritual?
Yeah.
So vitamin C serum. This is all quite new. And then a moisturiser. I change my moisturisers.
Mm-hmm. That's fine.
I try different things.
Yeah.
Growing up, it was always Oil of Olay when I was really little. My nan used to use Nivea. But now I just, you know, lots of different things. As long as it's quite nourishing. I do like things that are quite natural. I'm having a Weleda moment.
Weleda's a gorgeous brand.
I love it.
I mean, that will be related to your mum making masks from the fridge, yeah. won't it?
Yeah.
Because you've obviously just got a connection to that kind of beauty.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I love an expensive product because who doesn't? Because it just makes you feel luxurious. Mm-hmm. But I do question what that jar of squillion dollar cream is doing more than even the 20 quid jar of cream. So...
Yeah, well, having made my own, I know that you're right to be suspicious. I mean, there are certainly, I've been in this industry such a long time, there are certainly lots of situations where a brand has gone, we need to make, our retailers are asking us for £100 cream and they start with 100 quid and they work backwards.
Mm.
And what happens on the other side of the coin when you're doing an affordable brand is that every single ingredient you put in, you see the bottom line change and you're squeezing as much as you possibly can. It's the opposite.
Yeah.
You know, every single thing increases your price by a penny or two pennies or whatever. It's really interesting.
It is really interesting. And I think you've just got to find what works for you and what you can afford. I think for me, the issue is that what they're ultimately doing is they're making women believe that by spending their money on something expensive, it's going to give them something. And yes, don't get me wrong, there is a hit and a rush getting something that makes you feel fab. Like, I am absolutely guilty of it. I love a nice thing and I love a pot of a treat and I love something in my bathroom that everyone goes, oh, that smells lovely.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the kind of brain in me is like, but really.
But it sounds as though that's come to you in recent years. I don't mean that. I mean all of that stuff where you're kind of questioning everything you've been conditioned to think about yourself and everything you've ever been told about yourself. It feels like you're dismantling something.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like, what I know is that it's not the cream you're using, it's how you're going to use it. Just give yourself 5 minutes and massage it into your face. Don't just plop it on there.
I say this to people all the time. The most important thing with skincare is that you do it.
Yeah.
And products are less important than the habit.
Yes.
What you do most of the time is what impacts things. Yes. What you eat most of the time, how often you move. It's what you do most of the time. That's what impacts, not what you do some of the time. So if you have a really, really expensive, say £200 cream that you save to best, you might as well throw your money in the bin.
Yeah.
Because really taking a cheaper product and using it every single day will yield far greater results.
Definitely. And what you just said there, I mean, what I'm really, really about now is, I mean, I've always been, it's the holistic lifestyle. Don't get me wrong. Balance is everything. And I don't deny myself what I want. However, I really like to eat well and I cook and I like to exercise. And
so you love running, you love dancing, don't you?
I love dancing. Come on.
You're a person, I think of you, so obviously we know each other outside of this setting, and I think of you as quite a bouncy, active, yes to life kind of a person.
100%.
And I think of you as quite a mobile person. What does moving around do for your head?
Everything. Making me sit and do nothing is the worst thing you can do.
Really?
Yeah. I can watch a movie. I can, obviously. And I'm learning to just relax. No, what is relaxing? I think for me, relaxing is getting up and going for a run. When I'm in my good headspace is waking up, doing a bit of exercise, pottering around, cooking in my kitchen, listening to some music, reading a book. These things make me feel like, just a day to do the things I want to do.
Making yourself something lovely to eat is so nourishing in every way, isn't it?
And all of it. And I'm really aware of how much of what the culture I've been brought up in is now being sold back to me through the West.
Yeah.
All of it.
Of course.
And So, living a whole holistic lifestyle is what it's all about. So beauty is not just one separate entity. It's part of all of it. But yes, having nice skin is really important. But as you know, it's in and out.
So how do you feel in your skin now? When you look in the mirror, what do you feel about the person looking back at you?
Well, I had a couple of glasses of red wine last night, Sally. So today is not the best day to be talking about skin. Straight away, it's like, oh my God. Okay, this is going to be a big statement. It's like, ask a simple question. I just also feel like I've got to the point where now I just don't want to just... I've spent so many years giving people real surface-level answers because I'd never felt brave enough to say what I really wanted to say. I've spent a lifetime being made to feel shame about my skin and the colour of my skin. And for the first time in my life, I look at it and I think this is glorious.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. I feel emotional saying it. And I feel emotional because I can't imagine a little girl somewhere in Britain feeling what I felt.
But you're part of her not feeling that way.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone's skin is amazing. And and you're made to feel shame because your skin doesn't fit what you're meant to believe is beautiful. And so women go to such extreme that they will bleach their skin. You know, it's tragic. It is tragic that that is what women are made to feel, predominantly with men as well. So when I look in the mirror, I think, yeah, but don't get me wrong. I'll also look in the mirror and go, oh, get that face back on. Get some yogurt out of the fridge.
You see, you haven't fully escaped your mother's influence.
I never will, actually. And I love it. I'm so glad she did it. I do love a concoction.
And now you're in this amazing, amazing position of being Chancellor of Bradford University. It's incredible. And you have some degree of influence, certainly inspiration over these young women, many of whom are brown and black or somehow made to feel different and othered in some way. Yeah. And you are in a position of power and inspiration over them. What do you want them to know about themselves?
They're amazing. To get this honour is like the biggest thing to have happened to me ever.
I watched your speech on YouTube and it was so emotional.
Yeah, it was emotional because I've lived in London for over 20 years. Bradford made me. I think being Northern and living in London is a huge advantage. All the things that I thought were my disadvantages, being a woman, being Northern, being Asian, mm-hmm. are now my superpowers.
Having a Yorkshire accent.
Yeah. Those Southern middle-class men who have told me or have had power over me, because they have, they are the ones who have made decisions on my behalf about mm-hmm. my career or whatever, have a myopic view of life and they believe that they are right. Mm-hmm. And yet I have... I come with so many different views.
You know loads.
I know loads.
Yeah.
And yet I'm the one who's in the wrong.
Yeah.
Wow. That's wild. Let's get our heads around that one.
Yeah.
So 20 years in London, and now I've got an opportunity to give back to the city that gave me so much. And I did graduation ceremony in the summer. And Bradford's demographic at the university, there's a lot of black and Asian girls who are both from within this, mm-hmm. within Yorkshire, and a lot of international students. I was at Leeds University as well. That's where I graduated from. And they gave me an honorary doctorate. So jammy. Did no work.
I've got one of those as well. Well done us.
But Leeds, the demographic was very different. It was very white. And, you know, there was a real... I mean, it's graduation day is graduation day and it's a sense of elation and it's brilliant. And Leeds one was epic and, you know, it was funny and it was great and you could see the pride and, you know, the amount of hard work that's gone into it. But the Bradford graduation, when those girls from India, Pakistan, Nigeria, Ghana were stepping on that stage, it was a different fit. They know 100% what that education is going to do for them. They knew when they applied to move to Britain
right.
to get to study that degree the purpose and the reason they were doing it. They're not just going through the motions. They're not just doing what dad did. They're not just doing it because what else is there to do? They're doing it because it's going to change their life. And that, for me, is education changed my life, right? Yes, beauty is really important. Yes, presenting and turning up is so important. But the capacity to have knowledge and to have power as a woman, nothing is more powerful than that.
Yeah.
And so, yes, I am thrilled that I am the Chancellor. Oh my God, it's wild, really. It's setting amazing. Up the Rani Scholarship.
Wow.
We're going to fundraise to put 4 girls through university every year, 2 from within Bradford and 2 from abroad that are from absolute marginalised communities, either a care leaver, a refugee, or a woman with a disability, or somebody from a region that has very, very, very low intake of higher education. And that blows my mind. So I'll be asking everyone for money.
Thank you so much.
I talk a lot, don't I?
Thank you so much. I'm so glad you came on. I just think you're one of life's joy bringers, Anita Rani. I always think that, there's something about you that just kind of radiates something. I can absolutely see why you were made Chancellor.
Let's go and talk about beauty over a bottle of wine.
Absolutely. Or everything else.
Yeah.
Which is usually what happens. Thank you so much for coming on. I'm thrilled that you did. I'm really, really grateful. And if you enjoyed today's conversation with Anita Rani, please do subscribe to the podcast, Lots More Brilliant Women, Where She Came From. And also please do leave a review if you enjoyed yourself. And I'll see you next time. Bye.
Insanity Group.